and a range.
Yes.
And at this time, the vessel was coming to 180.
Yes.
Do you recall who was steering the vessel at that time?
I believe it was Jack Clare.
Clare.
Yes.
Do you recall the captain ordering the vessel to be put on gyro or automatic pilot?
No, I wasn't aware of that until the watch was being relieved, and Mr. Clare reported to me that the wheel had been relieved, steering 180 on the gyro.
The gyro. Then what did you do?
I acknowledged his report. At that time, I believe that the captain and I were having a discussion as to what was going to transpire, what he wanted to do, or what we needed to do to safely get around this ice.
Did you see the ice visually or on radar, either one?
I attempted visual contact, but couldn't. The evening was extremely dark, light mist in the air, and I was unable to make any visual contact with the ice. It's only on radar.
Only on radar. And about what was the range, say, the closest grouping of ice?
At that time?
At that time. The range, let's say the range and bearing of the nearest grouping of ice. If we could characterize it that way. If not, please describe it.
The northern edge of this of the ice flow would have been perhaps 2 miles dead ahead from dead ahead, and then it was just a solid flow of ice back up into Columbia Bay from there.
All right. Can you orientate yourself and describe where it was at in the traffic lanes? From what point on the chartlet here you first encountered ice, and how long it extended, how far it extended, from your recollection?
I'd have to ask you to repeat that. I didn't catch the whole question.
Ken, I was wondering. You said it was dead ahead, but the course was coming. It was coming to a course of 180.
Yes.
So I was wondering, was it dead ahead on the prior course or on the course of 180?
On the 200 course.
On the 200 course. Yes. And there was no way of going around the ice to the right?
No.
What was the speed of the vessel at this time?
I'd estimate the speed of the vessel at slightly better than 11 knots.
And was it in load program up at this time?
Not at that time, no. Not at the 2339 fix, it was not.
It was not. Do you recall about what RPM the vessel was turning?
I couldn't. No, I don't recall.
Would it have been maneuvering speed, full maneuvering speed?
Yes, we would still have been in maneuvering speed. I'd have to refer to the bell logger, but we would have been coming up to speed on the 55 RPM full ahead maneuvering.
And when you say coming up to speed, when you put the pilot, disembarked the pilot, did the vessel slow down at that time?
Normally, yes, typically it would. I wasn't on the bridge when the actual maneuver took place to slow the vessel down. Yes, you'd normally slow the vessel down to let the pilot off.
One other question about disembarking the pilot. Did the vessel change course at this time to make a leave for the pilot?
I'm not sure that it did. It doesn't appear that it did.
Mr. Woody, I just want you to observe that the witness was not using a recollection of any sort. He was examining the course recorder to provide you with an answer.
Thank you very much. You mentioned that you learned about the vessel being in gyro or automatic pilot at the change of the watch. Is this a customary, is it customary at this particular location to have the vessel in gyro?
No, it is not.
Now, I think you said you were having some discussion with the captain about what he wanted to do.
Yes.
Before we started asking questions about the ice. What did he tell you he wanted you to do?
He said that when we get to a beam Busby, we're going to have to start coming back into the lanes, and that the leading edge of the ice flow was actually extended beyond the northbound traffic lane. And I commented to the captain that it looked like we'll be outside all the lanes, and he said yes, that's what we had to do.
About, referring to the Charlie 4F, about where was the ice? Can you describe on here what the ice was at, the ice flow?
Yes, it, on radar, it could be described as looking like a cone in its flow, and it expanded as it got further away from the Columbia Bay. I had calculated the leading edge of that ice flow by means of radar ranges that we had 9/10 of a mile between the northern edge of Bligh Reef and that ice flow.
All right. Do you have a felt tip pen at your table?
Yes.
Attempt to mark the ice flow on the chart, if you would, please.
Let me see that pen. See that.
You're listening to live gavel-to-gavel coverage of the National Transportation Safety Board investigation of the Exxon Valdez grounding and oil spill. The witness on right now is Gregory Cousins, the third officer of the Exxon Valdez. He's being questioned by NTSB's marine safety investigator William Woody, and right now he's been asked to mark out the location of the ice that was in the shipping lanes on the night that the Exxon Valdez went aground on Bligh Reef.
Mr. Cousins, I know you've already started that, but I think it's only fair that would it be possible for you to do what you're doing on the larger map to your right, so everybody can see what you're drawing?
Yes, it would be possible.
Thank you.
Chairman,
that is the original
chart. You can do it only one below.
Thank you,
Commander.
We have a new chart we can
take this up there with us.
Sorry.
Well, the third mate, Gregory Cousins, is preparing to draw out the approximate locations of the ice on the chart right now. Maybe we can recap, Bruce, a little bit of how the line of questioning here has been going this morning.
Well, so far, Investigator William Woody has been asking third mate Cousins what his specific responsibilities are. He's been leading up to what happened during the accident, trying to determine where he was during loading and unloading. Now we're starting to get into the crux of the matter, where the captain had told Cousins that there was ice on board and they had to take some maneuver to avoid that.
The earlier questioning seemed to have been leading up to two issues, basically establishing what the third mate's routine was on the day that the Exxon Valdez was taking on cargo from the Alyeska Marine Terminal. Trying to establish, for instance, whether he got enough rest on that day, and he responded that he did. Also trying to establish whether the required checks of all the navigational equipment were performed, and third mate Cousins responded that he had checked items like the gyro compass and the course recorder, which of course will be the source of a lot of important information about where the Exxon Valdez was and what course it was on when it struck the reef.
One important fact he did say was that one of those course recorders tended to run a little bit slow. There were some especially in the earlier days of this accident, there were some discrepancies as to when, what time the accident actually occurred, and it appears from the line of questioning right now that that may come back to some question of verification when the accident was actually reported, as opposed to what the course recorder says. That seems to be the direction they're heading in right now.
And time seemed to be critical. William Woody has been following, establishing a kind of a chronological record of where Cousins was specifically when certain maneuvers were performed, when the pilot was let off, and when this critical course change from 200 to 180, in other words, to due south, actually took place.
Cousins has said that on the radar, he couldn't actually see the ice that the captain was talking about. It did show up on the radar. He described it as a cone that came out from Columbia Glacier, and he's now in the process of trying to diagram that out.
Right. You can see he's marking out with magic marker now a cone that crosses the two ingoing and outcoming shipping lanes that take tankers in and out of Valdez. Extending beyond those two shipping lanes and almost to the edge, we can see of Bligh Island and Bligh Reef.
He said that he had calculated 0.9 miles between the northern edge of the ice and Bligh Reef. Now, that's a pretty tight shot to squeeze a tanker through, and it appears that that issue may be coming up later on as they get farther into determining where the ice was.
The ice flow at the time that you and the captain were having your discussion.
Yes.
And it was about this amount of ice that was existing when the captain left the bridge.
Yes.
That
explains why I think we've
done that here. Some first makes sense. Yeah. Have you ever seen ice to this extent in past watches when proceeding through Valdez Arm?
Once before I have, yes.
Did you? Did the ice cause you to leave the traffic separation scheme?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. On that occasion, do you recall whether the captain or yourself informed the vessel traffic center that you were leaving the traffic separation scheme?
I don't recall because I was not on watch. As I remember, gone to the bridge to review some docking diagrams, and it's not unusual for officers to go out in the nav area and look and see where we're at and what's going on. And so I couldn't say if there are any communications. I would imagine that there were.
All right, now you were having a conversation with the captain. And at that time, the vessel was on 180 on automatic pilot. How long did the captain's conversation last? We're trying to fix a time, too. Did he leave the bridge after the conversation, or did he stay on the bridge? And if you could just reach out to
He stayed on the bridge for a period of time after the initial conversation. After that conversation, I went to the chart room and to use the chart, get distances in specific this extent of the ice flow and how much room that we were going to have from a DR position from at Busby Island.
All right. Now, had the change of the watch occurred, say at the time the captain left the bridge? Can you?
Yes, the watch was relieved prior to the captain leaving within a very short period of time thereafter the captain left the bridge.
Was the watch relieved at the normal time? That'd be.
I think the helmsman was a couple of minutes late showing up.
About what time would the helmsman relieve then?
Oh, maybe a minute after we'd started the load program up. That would have been 23:53, 23:52. It's the time frame that we're looking at here, and that sequence of events is very close, maybe within seconds.
I'm sorry.
Maybe perhaps within seconds. It may not even have been a full minute between the time that I had the conversation and with the captain, the second conversation with the captain, the load program up, and the watch being changed. This is nearly simultaneous.
Now, you're still on gyro.
Yes. I wasn't aware of the gyro order until the watch was relieved.
All right. And then this is the same time you're having a conversation with the captain about what he wants you to do.
We'd already had that conversation. He, he just reiterated what he had said before, and told me that he would be off the bridge for a short period of time, and that I should give him a call when we begin to start coming back into the lanes, if he had not already come up to the bridge.
Did he say what he had to do to what it was causing him to have to leave the bridge?
As I recall, he said he needed to get certain messages out before we left the sound.
Can you give us a description of the directions that the captain gave you? What directions did the captain give you about changing course back into the lanes?
The specific details of that conversation were we're steering 180 until we get a beam Busby. At that time, we're going to have to start coming back into the lanes. And
that
no
was
courses or anything of that nature were given. I had a rough estimate, but that was really not relevant to what he was getting at.
So your general instructions were at Busby Island Light, strike me back.
Yes.
Did you and the captain consult the chart together to identify a point at which you would return to the return to the lanes?
We did this at the radar.
At the radar.
Yes.
Did you or did the captain make any course lines on the chart at any time?
No.
Now, at this time, your watch was coming to an end, but you were not relieved.
That's correct.
Can you explain to us why you were still on watch?
I told the second mate as he was coming off deck that he could take his time relieving me, that I felt fine.
You felt rested at that time?
Yes.
Yeah. And did your extension of your watch then, was it a mutual agreement between you and the second mate, or?
Well, there was nothing specific about it. I just told him to take his time, coming up to the bridge, and that was it.
Had the second mate been called for his watch?
Evidently not. I was on deck with the pilot at the time the watch is normally called.
I see. So you were anticipating that he would come up, but take his time, perhaps, in arriving at the bridge.
That's correct.
Right. Who normally calls the oncoming mate for the watch?
In a normal situation, the watch officer would call his relief.
Normally, that would have been you that you would have called your relief.
Yes.
Did you make any kind of a conscious decision when you returned to the bridge not to call him, or did you presume the captain to call him, or can you explain?
I was had planned on calling him, when things got settled down that evening.
When you say settled down, do you mean when the vessel got through the ice or?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Now, when the captain left the bridge after giving you directions about turning back at Busby Island Light, did it seem that was feasible at the time he left? Did the ice appear, for example, to be such that you could have turned back when you reached that point?
When we reached the Busby Island Light, yes, it was.
You would have been, that would have allowed you to pass around the ice flow?
Yes.
Could you turn back toward the traffic separation schemes earlier?
No, not, and I've avoided the ice, no.
Did the vessel ever slow down that evening when it was approaching the ice?
Approaching the ice?
Yes.
No, it did not.
Okay. And at about 23, about the change of the watch is about the time you put, the vessel was put on load program up, so at that time, was it increasing speed?
Yes, it was.
So if I have it correct then, you've got your direction from the captain about when to change course, namely about Busby Island Light being a beam. You can't change course back earlier because the ice is still there.
Right.
The vessel is increasing speed. Are there any other particulars that you can think of that would help us to understand the situation that existed at the time the master left the bridge?
No, I couldn't think of anything else in that regard.
Right. Did you feel that that you'd be able to manage the situation?
Yes, I did.
In your conversation with the captain, did he ask you if you felt you had a good visual picture or you comprehended it or you were comfortable? Were there any exchanges like that made?
Yes, two different occasions.
And did the captain ask you a question of this nature?
Yes.
And what? How did he coach his question?
He asked me after the discussion of what we needed to do, if I felt comfortable with the situation and what we're going to do, and I said, yes, I did.
Right. Now, you're on the, you're, this is getting in now to the second mate's watch. This is getting into the time the second mate would normally be on the bridge.
Yes.
Were you familiar with his ABs on his watch?
One of them.
Which one was that?
Marine Jones. Stood watch with me before.
I see. Had you stood watch with the other AB before?
No, I hadn't.
Did you have any knowledge of his abilities or reliability or anything like that?
Not any specific knowledge.
Okay. Was everything normal as far as you could tell on the watch?
Was everything normal? At the time, yes. It seemed.
Now, let's go back again one more time. About what time then did the master leave the bridge?
I would say that would be 23:53. Yeah.
Okay.
Just shortly before I took that the fix on Busby Island Light.
Mr. Cousins, is that based on your recollection, or do you have some documentation that that's when the master left the bridge?
That's based on my recollection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the fix you're referring to is the 2355 fix off of when the ship was abeam of Busby Island Light.
Yes.
Okay. Describe the fix off of Busby Island Light. How did you take that fix?
visual bearing and a range prior to the taking of a visual bearing, I'd set the variable range marker on the 3-centimeter radar and set that up so I wouldn't have to take any time in collecting that bit of information after I'd taken the visual bearing.
Okay. And how did you take your visual bearing?
I used the port bridge wing repeater.
Okay. And you took a bearing when the vessel was abeam of the light?
Yes.
Okay. And how long did it take you to plot the fix?
Not more than a minute to take the fix and plot it.
All right. The time that you put on the fix, is that about the time that you finished making the fix? Or would that be the time that the vessel was abeam of the light? Can you recall what time that was?
The 23:55 is the actual time that I took the fix.
Time?
Yes.
And the controlling factor of the fix was the radar range or the bearing to the light?
The bearing.
The light. You took your bearing off the compass, and where did you look at the clock then?
I synchronized my personal watch against the bridge console clock that we use for also the bell logger.
And
All
right. Did you read your watch on the wing of the bridge or after you returned to the pilot house?
On the bridge wing.
Bridge wing. And you read 23:55 at that time?
Yes, I did.
Do you recall any reports about a flashing red light on the bow from the lookout?
Yes, at some point between actually putting the plot down and ordering the first rudder command, I remember the lookout reporting a flashing red light.
When did you see the flashing red light?
Shortly thereafter, upon returning out to the nav area of the bridge.
And where were you at the time you received the report?
I believe I was either in the chart room or just leaving the chart room to go out in the nav area.
Had you just finished plotting the 23:55 fix?
Yes.
And then what did you do?
I ordered 10 right rudder at that time.
Well, did you order the rudder right 10?
Yes.
Did it appear from the radar? Did you look at the radar and see where the ice was at this time?
Yes, I stayed at the radar, yeah.
I proceeded directly
to the radar from the chart room.
All right. And you believed you could get around the ice at this time?
The ice was still very close aboard, almost it appeared on the radar as being fine on the starboard bow. There were returns fine on the starboard bow.
All right, now.
My attempt was to start to an easy swing towards the ice.
All right. Had you taken the vessel off gyro, off of automatic pilot?
Yes. We went to hand steering before the 23:55 fix.
Prior to the 23:55 fix?
Yes.
How many minutes prior to the fix?
Oh, 1 or 2 minutes.
Okay. Now, while you were at the radar, do you recall any further reports about the flashing red light on your starboard bow?
Yes, Marine Jones reported again the flashing red light. The first report she gave me, she said it was a 5-second light, and she corrected herself a short time later. Not right at that time that I returned to the.
And did you identify which light that was?
Yes, I knew which light she was reporting.
And that light is. Which light is that?
That's a Bly Reef buoy.
Bly Reef buoy light. After you gave your right 10 degrees, right 10 degrees rudder, did you witness the rudder angle indicator to ensure that the rudder was actually applied?
At that time, I turned my back to use the bridge telephone to call the captain and inform him that we were going to begin our turn back into the traffic lanes.
And what else did you tell the captain? Did you make any report, for example, about ice, where it was at?
I told him that it looked like that we might get into that the bottom edge of the ice.
I'm sorry, would you say again, please? The bottom what?
Yes, the bottom leading edge of the ice.
The leading edge of the ice.
Yes. And he said, okay, we had a short conversation about the second mate. He wanted to know if the second mate had made it up to the bridge yet. And he said that he'd be up shortly.
Did it, at this time, did you have any concerns about getting past the ice?
Not at that time, not at that instant, no.
Right. Now, you have right 10 degrees rudder on. How long was the right 10 degrees rudder on the vessel, and what did you observe?
I estimate a minute and a half, that the rudder was perhaps 2 minutes, that the rudder was at 10 right. Upon finishing conversation with the captain, I went back to the radar, and I noticed no appreciable heading change.
Now, you have right 10 degrees rudder on. How long was the right 10 degrees rudder on the vessel, and what did you observe?
I estimate a minute and a half, that the rudder was perhaps 2 minutes, that the rudder was at 10 right. Upon finishing conversation with the captain, I went back to the radar, and I noticed no appreciable heading change at all, and that's when I ordered the 20 right rudder.
And did you look at the rudder angle indicator at any time to see if the right 20 degrees rudder was put on?
Upon returning to the radar and ordering it, yes, I did look up at the indicator, and it was swinging towards 20 right, yes.
Great. And was it was past right 10?
All right. I can't recall what it was, but I...
Let me rephrase the question. Did you ever read right 10 degrees rudder on the rudder angle indicator?
I can't recall that I did.
Okay. Was the vessel swinging at all? Was there any change in the heading that you could detect on the compass?
Not at the right 10, no.
Not the right with the right 10. It was
no.
Still on 180. Had the vessel swung left or right in any amount that you could detect?
No.
How long was your conversation with the master?
Perhaps a minute or so.
Perhaps a minute or so.
Yeah.
Like you're... Now, we're not talking about minutes, but not moments. Rather than moments. This was like, you think, maybe over 60 seconds you were talking?
No, not at all. No. Perhaps 30 seconds would be near, less than a minute would be more correct.
All right. Did your conversation consider slowing the vessel down? Was there anything about slowing the vessel down?
No, there was not.
Not. At that time, did that appear to you as a desirable course of action to slow down?
At that time, no.
Okay. All right. After you put on the right 20 degrees rudder and witnessed the rudder angle indicator changing, did you observe it to go to right 20 and stop?
Yes, I believe I did. I can't specifically recall, but that it did. But I would have looked at the rudder angle indicator at that time. Yes.
You would have looked at it.
Yes.
That would have been your practice.
Yes.
Okay. Did the helmsman order respond to your orders? Did he say right 10, or did he? Do you recall any acknowledgement?
Not specifically, but that's, again, something that's pretty much a standard.
Yeah.
But I can't sit here and specifically recall it that he said, Roger, 20 right.
Again, the same kind of a question. Do you recall him saying the rudder is at right 10?
Not specifically.
Okay. Did, or the same thing question?
But I would have noticed that, if he had not said something to that effect.
You would have noticed if he had not?
Yes.
Okay. So the if he had not, and the same thing goes for the right 20, if you had if he had not responded to your order for right 20, and if he had not told you when it was on right 20, you would have checked on that?
That's correct, yes.
Right. Was there any difficulty with exchanging commands with the helm? Did he seem to have difficulty hearing you? Was there any difficulty that you can recall?
No, none that I recall.
And now, about how long was the vessel on right 20 degrees before you did something else?
I estimate 2 minutes.
About 2 minutes?
Yes. I'd taken time to just step out. After the 20 right, I'd stepped out onto the bridge wing and looked back at Busby, and I'd returned to the radar. I was focused in on the progress of the ship on the radar. 2 minutes, and then the hard right.
So from the total, if we could reconstruct then, between the right 10 degrees rudder, you made a telephone call to the captain, told him that you were coming back. Did you mention the amount of rudder you were using?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So and after the rudder, then you and after the telephone conversation with the master, then you returned to the radar.
Correct.
Looked in the radar, detected that the vessel's heading had not changed. Then you ordered right 20 degrees rudder.
Yes.
Observed that the rudder angle indicator was indicating the rudder was going to right 20. All right, then the next sequence, how long between that time and, say, the hard right rudder?
I'll estimate 2 minutes or about that.
As much as 120 span. Seconds, in other words.
Yes, about okay. That time span.
Something like that. Did you give any kind of a course to the steersman to come to?
No, I did not.
No. Did you have any course in mind that you're going to bring the vessel to?
Not at that time.
Okay. What was the next thing you did?
After the 20 right, is that?
Yes, you start there if you wish, please. Mm-hmm.
After stepping out onto the bridge wing, looking back at Busby Island Light, I observed the Bligh Reef buoy light, stepped back inside, looked at the radar. I didn't really like what I was seeing. Very little transfer off our original track line. I ordered hard right.
When you say transfer, what are you speaking of?
Transferring away from our track line, or the momentum of the vessel was such that we're essentially following a 180 track, although at that time the heading was changing.
All right. About what was the heading at this time?
I don't recall.
All right. What was the bearing of Busby Island Light?
It was on the port bow. I'd estimate two.
I'm sorry, Busby Island Light. That would be one that on your port bow.
Oh, Busby. Mm-hmm. On our port quarter.
On the port quarter.
Yeah.
And then again, your answer on the Bligh Reef buoy light. Where was it at?
About 2 points on the port bow.
2 points on the port bow.
Yeah.
What was the next thing you did? If you could just recount the events.
Upon ordering the hard right rudder, and taking several seconds at the radar, I called the captain And I said to him at that time, I think we're in serious trouble. And even during that conversation, at the end of that conversation, is when I felt the initial shock to the vessel.
Would you characterize or describe that shock to the vessel?
It was like a slight roll, very unusual sensation that you knew we'd hit something.
Did you have any feeling of where the contact was made with the vessel? Was it forward or aft or one side
forward,
or the other?
Forward, yes.
Did you have a feeling for which side it was on? At that time?
It seemed to be on the starboard side, as I recall.
And what was the next? And what was the next thing that occurred?
Several seconds passed, and we experienced a series of jolts to the vessel.
And how long did these jolts last?
Ten seconds.
Do you have any feeling of how many jolts the vessel sustained?
I'd say six.
About six jolts.
The sensation was that you're just riding over something. By the time that we came to a full stop, I'd estimate six of these very sharp jolts. Yes.
And then did the vessel come to all stop?
Yes, it did.
What was the heading of the vessel at this time?
As best that I can recall, the heading was 285 or something like that.
Did the contacts or these jolts, did that cause the vessel to change course in any way?
It didn't appear to, because there was at that time a significant swing on the vessel from the hard right, from the 20 right and hard right rudder.
Did you have a good swing on the vessel before the first contact?
Yeah, we had just started a very good, fast swing on the bow.
All right. Did you continue to hold, to keep the right rudder on the vessel?
Up until the series of jolts, at that time, I ordered a hard left rudder. There seemed to be hesitation, and I spun the wheel hard left.
And what happened after the hard left?
By that time, I believe that we were hard aground.
Was the vessel still
making... The vessel continued to swing for I don't know how many degrees, I can't recall.
Was it more than 10, something?
I believe it was.
It was more than 10. Was it perhaps 20 degrees or more or less?
I wouldn't say more than 10 degrees. No, not more.
And what was the effect of the shift of the rudder?
I was attempting to check the swing of the bow and possibly get it to swing the other way, hopefully keeping the aft section of the ship, the engine room, from making contact with anything.
When was the, can you recall any other events at this time that occurred?
If you could be more specific.
Surely. The vessel is all stop. You have left rudder on. Is the swing slowing down?
Yes.
The vessel is stopped, its forward motion is stopped now.
Yes.
Does it still have a right swing?
As I recall, no, it did not.
It did not. Were the engines still running?
Yes, they were.
And was there any change in the engine speed made at this time?
I don't recall at what time the engines were stopped. The master was then on the bridge. I can't say exactly at what moment he did get to the bridge. I had gone out on the bridge wing when I realized when I knew we were grounded, and I was just turned on a bridge wing light and shined it over the side to see what I could see.
And what did you see?
Really not much. I didn't detect any oil. They really wouldn't show up that well at that time of day anyway. It's just too black.
Were there any fumes?
I smelled inert gas and crude oil vapors.
And crude oil vapors?
Yes.
Was there any alarms or any noises aboard the ship at the time the vessel grounded?
Not on the bridge.
Did you hear any relief valve, say, the inert gas system or anything like that?
Yes, we could hear our bullets lifting out on deck.
Is that where the smell of inert gas came from?
Yes.
Was there any ever a danger of fire after the grounding?
I would say that there would be, yes.
Were any special precautions taken to prevent the occurrence of fire?
Not to my knowledge.
If I may go back to just a moment, when you took the vessel off of the off the gyro, off automatic pilot, who did that?
I did that.
You did that. Is putting the vessel on automatic pilot and taking off something that is sometimes done by the helmsman?
Occasionally. But it's really the responsibility of the watch officer to transfer between modes of steering.
All right. When the vessel was put on automatic pilot, you said at first you did not know this until the watch was changed. Who put it on automatic pilot that night? Did you subsequently ascertain who that was?
Or how? No, I don't know who put the autopilot on.
Okay. Were any calls made to the Coast Guard after the grounding?
Not immediately after the grounding.
All right. Would you describe what you observed the master to do after he returned to the bridge?
To the best of my recollection, the captain had requested the chief mate to make an assessment of the damage, how many tanks were holed. And he remained on the bridge. There was an attempt to move the vessel.
Would you describe that, please?
There were a series of engine commands given to see if there was a possibility of extricating the vessel off the reef.
Were you operating the telegraph?
Yes, I was.
And it was in bridge control at that time, is that correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Do you recall what particular orders you received and that you executed, without looking at the documents, just if you can recall?
They were, not without referring to the rough log.
All right. Did the vessel ever back at any time?
I don't recall it did, no.
All right. When the vessel grounded, you said that, going back to the time you took your fix, you said you looked at your watch when you took your fix on the wing of the bridge. Did you look at your watch at the time of grounding to determine the time?
The one time that I can remember is on the charts of 0004. I think that was the time given an error as the time of grounding. I recall that more as being the time of the initial contact that I felt.
All right.
But if I did look at my watch or any other timepiece on the bridge, I don't recall what the time was.
All right. So I think you're saying this, that the 004 represents the first contact.
Correct.
Right. And about how long afterwards was it that the vessel actually grounded? Was it a minute later? I think in terms of seconds, perhaps, if you could just recall in your mind and count them off.
I would estimate between 40 and 50 seconds.
So in other words, the grounding might have been these series of six bumps, or as you described them, I believe was six strikies. That would occur perhaps at 005 then, 0005.
Correct.
Okay. Do you believe it could have been any later than 5 minutes after midnight?
I don't believe so, no.
In other words, you believe the time of 004, 005 is perhaps within a minute of the grounding of the vessel?
Correct.
Which you mentioned that you don't recall looking at any timepieces, but what would have been the clock or timepiece that you would have looked at for something like this?
My watch or the clock that I referred to earlier, that's on the bridge console.
On the bridge what, please?
On the bridge console.
Okay, on the bridge console.
Yes.
Would you have been in a position at any time to look at the clock on the bridge console?
Yes, I would have been.
Okay. Did you look at the clock after you turned the lights on or before you turned the lights on, the deck lights?
That would have been before.
Before?
Yeah.
What efforts were made to alert the crew of the condition of the vessel?
I went below and knocked on doors and informed crew members as to what happened. Also, the lookout, Marine Jones, was down below also informing people.
Following the grounding, you mentioned that the captain came to the bridge, gave a number of orders. These were, and you mentioned you were running the telegraph. Do you recall what rudder orders he gave?
No, I do not recall.
Do you have any feeling at all whether they were hard right or hard left? Or
there may have been a hard right rudder command. I can't, that would only be speculation on my part. Right. As to
over what minute, what period of time did you stand there giving engine changes at the console, making?
I would have to refer to
All right, please go ahead and refer to the records and see if you can reconstruct what you might have done there in the way of engine speeds.
What exhibit are you asking Mr. Cousins to refer to?
I think he's looking at the bell book, and I think that's 4C. 4C, thank you.
Mr. Woody, can I ask you, when you do ask the witness to refer to an exhibit?
We're once again referring to the engine room log in an effort to find out what maneuvers were taken to in an effort to get the Exxon Valdez off the reef. The witness right now is Third Mate Gregory Cousins. He's responding to questions from Marine Safety Investigator William Woody.
The last telegraph engine order was at 0047.
Oops. On your times, do you feel comfortable with those times? And this would indicate that the vessel was being maneuvered for well over half an hour.
Yes, I do.
The reason I ask this is in the engine room log, it indicates that the engines were secured about 20 minutes after the hour.
The correct, but the load program up was discontinued. We stopped engines, and then at 0035, again, we gave engine orders.
Commence giving engine orders again,
yes.
0035. And that continued from 0035 until 0047.
Yes. Actually, I have, yes, that's correct, yes.
And during this time, was the master giving rudder orders as well?
I believe he was, yes, as I recall.
Do you recall any movement of the vessel, any change of heading or any listing?
Very slight swing.
Very slight swing.
Yes.
I believe I've asked you before, but let me ask again. Were any of these orders that you received during this time of 0035 to 47, were any of them any for the stern?
No.
They were all ahead.
Yes.
And they... What caused the master to discontinue giving engine orders and helm orders?
Well, it was very apparent that we were not going to be able to extricate the vessel off the reef after.
Did he make any kind of a statement that this is futile or we must stop or it's a danger, anything like that that you can recall?
Yeah, yes, he did.
Can you characterize what he said?
I believe it's similar to what you just said, that this obvious this isn't going to work. We'd better, you know, we'd stop it now.
We'll stop.
Yeah.
Do you recall when the vessel notified the Coast Guard when that was done? Were you present on the bridge?
I was present. I don't recall the precise time.
Okay. Was there... Do you have any feeling for whether it was 10 or 15 minutes after the grounding or immediately following, or was it associated with any of the maneuvers or orders that you can think of?
There was a short period of time after the grounding. I have a sense of 10 to 15 minutes or something like that.
All right. Just what you recall.
Yes.
Do you have any recollection of what the conversation was about? What information was provided?
No, I do not.
Okay. Do you recall anything, any instructions from the Coast Guard?
No, I do not. I didn't hear any of the transmission between the captain and the Coast Guard.
Okay. But you were on the bridge at that time?
I was on the bridge, somewhere on the bridge.
Okay. Is it that they were not audible, or you just do not recall them?
Not audible
they
to me.
Not
wherever it, that was from the bridge wing to inside, answering telephone, various other things that I was doing that you know, I would not have heard the transmission.
All right. Do you recall who the first person was to arrive on the bridge after the grounding?
Other than the captain, or?
Yes, after the captain.
Chief mate.
And do you recall who the chief mate spoke to?
The captain.
Did he speak to the captain?
Yes, he did.
Do you recall any kind of a conversation with the chief mates where you said, well, the captain knows about the grounding or he's been informed? Or...
Yes,
do you recall?
I'm not really privy to, I mean, the chief mate didn't say anything to me, as I recall. He may have made a comment, but I'm not privy to any conversation that chief mate and the captain had on the bridge.
But you observed he and the captain talking on the bridge?
Yes.